accession number 27811, Major Richard Wilson, Reel 15. Now, we're talking about your time in Berlin, at this barracks in Berlin. How did you get on with the Germans? Any Germans, really, the civilians, the army. What was the sort of relationship?
Well, I think the Brits were not in many ways unlike the Americans are over here. We had our own camps, our own cantonments, our own married quarter set up, and on the whole, we didn't tend, I don't think, to actually have a great deal to do other than when we went shopping or whatever it was with the German population, any more than the Americans at Lake and Heath and Mildenhall, who hardly ever leave the base. Certainly speaking for myself, I don't think I ever went to a German German civilian house while I was there. So I would say we had, on the whole, we had very little to do with the German population. Probably Bill Murray Brown may have been asked to a mayor's reception or that sort of thing. But there was, at my level, there was very, very little on that.
Now, what happens next then? What's the next thing you remember?
I did so long in Berlin. We moved to Berlin in 60, I suppose. It must have been 61. I was then appointed adjutant of the 4th Battalion, the Suffolk Regiment, which was still called the Suffolk Regiment because it was a TA battalion, which was based in Ipswich and had companies around Suffolk, Lowestoft, Leiston, Wisbeach, Bury St Edmunds, Sudbury. This is a TA battalion, so other than one regular sergeant or sergeant major in each company, there was just myself and the commanding officer, who were regular soldiers. All the rest were terriers.
And this was what month of 61, do you reckon? Sorry, Anna.
I think it must have been 61, yes.
Wait, no more than that, yeah, right. Now, so the companies were widely scattered then? All the platoons and companies were widely scattered?
They were very widely scattered, yes. Yes, one was forever on the road. Because the only time you could, they had one night a week when they met at their drill halls, and they all met, where possible anyhow, on different nights. So Wisbeach would be Monday, Bury Tuesday, etc., etc. And then the rest of the time when they were out would be weekends. So you were soldiering, you did your sort of office adjutantal work during the day, and then got into your car and went off to Wisbeach for the evening, and came back in. And I had a house just outside Woodbridge, which I'd rented, quite an interesting little cottage, Fitzgerald Cottage it was called, because it's where Fitzgerald had translated the Omar Khayyam. Which was a nice little cottage, and so I centred myself there, which was only about 8 miles from my office in Ipswich, at that stage I had a regular commanding officer, who was a chap called George Springfield.
Now, how did you get on with him?
I got on with him very well. He was a great chap. I liked him very much. He was a good leader. I respected him. He was very much a countryman. I think even in those days he was still riding in point to points and that sort of thing. So we got on very well, very well. So, and he, and of course, was a help that, because he could do some of the visits as well. You know, we both visited. But later on, when he retired, I then had a... we came to halfway through my period with them, we had another amalgamation. And we amalgamated the Suffolk Regiment TA and the Cambridgeshire Regiment TA. And we became the Suffolk and Cambridgeshire Regiment. And then my commanding officer was a very interesting individual called Peter Story Pugh. And he had been shot up in Colditz during the Second World War and tried to get out a number of times. And he was a great character. So that left would have left me on my own.
In what way was he a character? Just let me.
He was a great leader of men. I mean, the men absolutely adored him. You know, he was one of those people who, you know, get out of his Land Rover and immediately he would be encircled by, you know, by troops. I mean, they had tremendous respect for him as a. As a natural leader, I can't say that he actually did a great deal of the sort of writing of exercises and all the rest of it and that side of life himself. But once you got him on the ground, and given him an exercise, and he was commanding the battalion. Then he was absolutely excellent. I mean, you know, he would have taken them anywhere, and I would have gone anywhere with him. A very brave man.
Now, how did this new this was a battalion? What was its number? It was the was it the
well,
Suffolk came
they didn't have a no. Yes, I mean, yes, we were the Suffolk side. We were the 4th Battalion, the Suffolk Regiment. Although this is all after amalgamation.
So you stayed that even after you joined.
But the Terrier side still retained the Suffolk Regiment name.
No, but I mean, after you joined with the Cambridges,
Then we were the Cambridges. You see, the Cambridgeshire Regiment had always been part of the core of the Suffolk Regiment, and although they called themselves Cambridges, they came under the auspices of the Suffolk. And during the Second World War, for example. In Singapore was caught up 4 and 5 Suffolk, which were both TA battalions, and 1 and 2 Cambridges, which were also both TA battalions. So we just had a straight amalgamation of the Cambridgeshire TA battalion and the Suffolk TA battalion.
And you were then called the...
And we were called Suffolk and Cambridgeshire. And we had our headquarters in Cambridge.
So you were just a Suffolk and Cambridgeshire battalion?
Yes.
No number or anything?
No, that was just the Suffolk. The Suffolk. I think the Suffolk renamed the Suffolk and Cambridgeshire Regiment, I think. If you actually talk to any Cambridges today, the few that are left, they would probably politely want to forget, actually, that they would just call themselves Cambridges, I expect. Because it was a very short-lived, I can't remember now how long it went on for, because I'd obviously left them by then, but they were eventually absorbed into Royal Anglian.
But your headquarters, your headquarters remained at Ipswich, or did it move?
No, we moved to Cambridge. So I then had... I can't remember whether I went on using Cambridge. I didn't have the amalgamation. It wasn't very long after the amalgamation that I was then, I went back to the 1st Battalion, but the Cambridgeshires had a training major who was a chap who was a regular called Ernie Morgan, who had been our intelligence officer in Malaya, and so so we still actually had two regulars with the battalion, he and I, although George Springfield, the other regular, had retired by then. And obviously we had one or two more company locations too, because there were the Cambridgeshire locations to go to.
Now, was it a successful amalgamation, would you say?
Yes, I would. Yes, because it didn't affect anything terribly. I mean, you know, Leiston still went on, and Sudbury still went on, and Cambridge and Whittlesea or wherever, you know, it didn't change them at all, because their headquarters, that little company headquarters with little outstations and the rest of it, still sort of operated as they were before. And a TA battalion only really gets together when it has a company weekend. I mean, the rest of the time, they're all Sudbury boys from Sudbury, and they happen to make up that particular company. And so whether they, under auspices of Suffolk or Cambridgeshire, didn't actually make a great deal of difference to them. There might have been, I mean, the Suffolk, when the headquarters became Cambridge, a few of the Ipswich old stagers may well have, you know, felt a bit sort of thing, I don't know, but it wasn't a difficult amalgamation, because it didn't really, other than a sort of change in name, it didn't actually affect them greatly on that.
Now, what would you do on a typical visit to a drill night? What were you looking for? Do you see what I mean? You're turning up as the adjutant, and so they're having their drill night.
Well, I would think the main thing of going to a drill night is to be seen. I think it's terribly important that if you're pushing out instructions from Ipswich and all the rest of it, and you're signing yourself an adjutant for Suffolk or whatever it is, then I think it's very important that they know who you are. I mean, otherwise, the only other time they would see you is on an exercise, when you'd be, you know, sort of rushing around trying to make sure all the company commanders were doing what they should be doing, and all the rest of it. And the men would never sort of hardly see you. I'm a great believer of you must lead from the front. You must be seen. To be there. It's rather the same of which 1 minute you're a regimental officer and you know sort of everybody and everybody knows you, and the next minute you're a staff officer, and everybody always said that even a good regimental officer, as soon as he became a staff officer, seemed to totally change his spots, and this was partially, I think, caused because often, in my opinion, staff officers did not get off their chairs and get out and visit the units as much as possible. And whenever I was a staff officer, and when I was training troops at Bassingbourne, the one thing I always did was to get out and see the units that I was either looking after or supplying recruits to, so that you could talk to the chap who was receiving, in, for example, your recruits that you trained, and to see if you were training them properly. Otherwise, how did you know that you were? And I used to visit. We trained for the whole of, when I was there, the whole of the Queen's Division. I'm jumping slightly, I know. But I got used to go out to every unit and say, "Come on, I'm supplying you with recruits. Now tell me what's wrong with them."
And we'll come back to that.
Yeah.
Now, anything else about this time with, well, the 4th Battalion Suffolk Regiment and then the Suffolk and Cambridgeshire Regiment? Anything happen?
No, we didn't. We were never called out to, to do anything.
How were you managing the withdrawal from national service? Because people had an obligation to attend, didn't they, for 3 or 4 years?
They did.
It was coming to an end.
It must be coming to an end.
It may have ended. How are they managing for recruits?
Recruiting, again, I think, was very local. If you had a really good company commander who ran a good ship, he would get recruits, because it was all pretty local. If he's commanding a company in Leiston, he won't want to draw his recruits from more than 10 or 20 mile radius, because we're now going back to the early 60s. I mean, they didn't all have cars and things in those days. So he would be recruiting from a fairly small base, and they were really responsible for recruiting and running their own ships on that.
Now, how long were you there for then?
I was there for two years, I suppose. 61. I think I joined the 1st Battalion sometime in 63, like mid 63, I think.
So 61 to 63 at Cambridge. Now, how did you come to leave them, or was that just the end?
Well, it was the end of my. I did two. My appointment was two. An adjutantal appointment was normally 2 years, and my 2 years came to an end, and then Jack Dye, who was commanding the 1st Battalion, who in fact I did know quite well because he'd been a company commander in Berlin. He asked me if I would become his adjutant, which was fairly brave of him because he knew me quite well. I naturally said yes, I'd be delighted. And so sometime in 63, I think probably mid-63 sometime, I then joined the 1st Battalion, who were then in Felixstowe, having just got back from, not very long back, from Guyana, British Guyana. In those days, we were based where the huge Felixstowe docks are now.
Now, how did you get on with Jack Dye? Can you talk a bit about him? Because he's still alive. We've interviewed
him. Oh, very much so.
What was he like?
In fact, he's staying with me last week. He was a tremendous chap to work for.
Why? People say that about him, but what was so good about him?
I suppose the best thing about him was that he gave you a job to do and left you to get on and do it. And he didn't interfere with you. We had a very good team, I think, anyhow, and it seemed to work very well. Jack was commanding. We had a chap called Alex Turnbull, who was an Australian. Well, I'm not sure he was a naturalised Australian, but who was second in command. And then there was myself as the adjutant. And I think as a team, although I say it myself, but I think Jack would agree, we ran a fairly good ship.
And what was Turnbull like? He was a major.
He eventually commanded Four-Royal Norfolk, or it could have been something Royal Anglian by then. But anyhow, he commanded a TA battalion eventually.
And what was he like? He
was a tremendous chap. I mean, absolutely straight up and down. Called everything, what it was, and a great help to me, because he was more experienced than me, because he was a bit older than me, and so if Jack had said a few things that I didn't really quite hoist in what he wanted, then Alex would, would always put me straight. And, there was not a lot. There was not a lot of difference between Alex and Jack. I mean, they were both of the same same ilk. Two damn good soldiers, friends, great chaps to have around. One would have gone anywhere with them.
Now, what were you doing in Felixstowe?
Well, the battalion had just got back from a tour in British Guiana. And what were we doing in Felixstowe? Well, it was a very odd place to be, wasn't it? It was right on the sort of edge of nothing. I suppose we must have been part of some brigade, or perhaps there was a brigade in Colchester, or something like that. I can't remember a great deal. How long did I do? I must have done about 9 months in Felixstowe, I think.
Into 64.
That was, and then in 64 we went to Aden. But anyhow, at some stage would have been early 64. I suppose we were warned to go for a tour in Aden, and that took a lot of, you know. Obviously training. Went towards the sort of things that we'd be doing, internal security operations in Aden. So our training must have been very much thing towards that.
Now, was there anything new in the sort of training you were doing for internal security? I mean, had methods changed? Because they do change at some time from the 50s through.
I don't know. I think we did all many of the sort of same things that we would have been doing for training in like Trieste. I mean, you know, cordon and searches, riot drills, and we'll come on to it. But when we did eventually get to Aden, of course, our main time was in the Radfan, when operations were very much like the Northwest Frontier Ops would have been between the wars.
Now, any other preparations for Aden?
No, we flew out.
Now, what do you remember of the flight out?
What do I remember about the flight out? Not very much, to be quite honest. I don't know how many. I can't even remember whether we flew out RAF wise or Monarch Airlines, who were doing all the air trooping from Luton. I just can't remember. But anyhow, we flew out and arrived in Aden, and we were billeted in Waterloo Lines, which was a modern camp. Very comfortable, air conditioned, all modern offices. It wasn't a temporary setup at all. And we were became part of Aden Brigade. And our main duty was internal security operations in Aden itself, which included Crater.
Now, what was going on in Aden? I mean, I'm not asking for a lecture, but what as you perceived it then, was going on in Aden?
There was a certain amount of unrest. There was the sort of murders going on when shoppers down in Aden Port and that sort of thing. It was very much a very difficult situation, I think, really, to deal with. In that a lot of the unrest was an Arab gentleman coming up behind somebody and then just shooting him in the back, and within 10 seconds was away in the crowd, and you know that was it. A lot of the I mean, we had our families out there, so they were all had to be sort of looked after, and they weren't, in many cases, they weren't actually in particular cantonments. They were all like down as you went from Waterloo Lines down into Aden Port, the sort of main shopping bit of Aden. We went through a place called Marla, and that was all flats, and there used to be families and things there. But our main job was, you would be sort of duty IS battalion, and if there was an incident anywhere,
IS would be
internal security. You would have a sort of internal security battalion, because I think there were three battalions in Aden Brigade, I think, maybe two. But you know, there would be an incident, and you'd have a standby platoon, or probably standby company. And a platoon or whatever the CO thought at the time would be dispatched to deal with this particular incident. And I mean, well, I suppose the best sort of book on all this to probably read is Mad Mitch, who was quite good at getting himself into incidents.
Now, you wouldn't be on one of these, you'd be at headquarters.
I'd be at headquarters, yes. I mean, my job was, the administration of a battalion has to go on regardless of where you are. And then the other sort of things one used to do, there was a road from Aden to Darla, which is about, Darla must have been about 60, 70 miles, I don't know. I think the Federal Regular Army had one of their bases there, and they were the local Federal Army. But one would have to send convoys up there, and troops would have to, be on each truck and all that sort of thing. And then we had certainly one outstation, a place called Macaris, which was
Macaris.
MUHKERIAS, something like that. And this was a sort of Brit outstation up on the Yemen border. And I think we had a company up there, I think, all the time. I seem to remember I flew up there two or three times to see them. So we were kept, we were kept pretty busy, but at the same time, all the normal things, went on. I mean, there was time for football and to give the troops time off. And we had the regimental bands. There used to be band concerts. There was a cinema. We had a busy time, but we were able to get on and do all the other. There was a perfectly normal mess life. We had the families out there, so that all went on the same.
Did you have a family by then?
Well, I before I left Felixstowe, I got engaged to my wife Rachel. She at that time was looking after horses in Northumberland, so I used to motor to Heathrow and then fly up to Newcastle and have a weekend and come back again. And then before we went to Aden, we got engaged. And then whilst I was in Aden, I came home and got married. And for my last 6 months in Aden, my wife came out, and that was her sort of first overseas tour, as it were.